Hey, Yarun.
Hi, how are you?
Are you in Florida? You look so relaxed.
I am.
What's that? I can't hear you.
Do you hear
Can you
me?
hear me, Aaron?
I hear you.
You hear me?
Aaron, you're good. You're good.
If I don't hear you, though, could somebody talk so I could see if my thing is working?
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello.
Keep talking, keep talking.
Hello.
Oh. Okay, someone say something again.
Hello.
Now I hear you. Okay, very good. Is that Shirley Pikus? Oh my gosh, she's becoming an all-star. All-star.
I'm just telling you now, I may have to leave soon. I have a chavrusa that's supposed to call me Rabbi Gibber.
Really? You learn Rabbi Gibber?
Yeah, been learning for like 2 years now.
Wow, can I get in on that?
Sure.
That's pretty chashuv.
So he's supposed to call me. I'm not going in now because I've got lots of cases over here, so.
Really?
Yeah. My father-in-law, so.
Really? Oh my gosh. I was thinking like December.
Yeah. Well.
Oh gosh, Shirley, when's mayor's wedding?
It's on Sunday.
Oh gosh. Okay, that's fantastic. So maybe it's like 9 o'clock. Maybe I'll say a few words, because who knows how long you could stay. So
okay,
whatever who comes in, we'll worry about it then.
Okay.
So now I scribbled together just a few ha'aris, because they made me pick a topic. And you know, when you pick a topic and it's just a topic, you pick the topic and you worry about the rest later. So I picked the topic. I think it's something like where Hayoni, Yerachmiel, where parenting and chinuch intersect, or something like that. An inside look. I have no idea what that means. But I thought I would do is I try to come up with like a few insights of key chinuch points that we need in parenting. So I thought that, you know, sometimes the chinuch insights are good for the classroom. It's good for, you know, kiruv. Perhaps it's good for administration, but the Iker Chinuch is in the house. That's Kuli Amalo Pligi. You know, person, I'm finishing my first year from my father. So the Iker Chinuch a person gets is from their parents. And let's face it, no Rebbe and no mentor could replace what you learned when you grew up, because that's like it's in your blood. So I tried to select a few things. So the first thing I wanted to bring down is I learned a lot from my years in camp. And I learned from my years in camp what you should do at home. But one thing is like this. The Stipler said, if you want your kid to daven, daven. It's the Iker way to be mechanech your own children is, you don't have to even utter a word. So I was once at one of these Shabbatons we made for parents in Miami. Rabbi Bauman organized it. I think it was back in the days where Grumblatt was here. And we invited Rabbi Noach Orlovic to come, Mashkiach, famed Mashkiach of Torah R, etc. And he came down and he had a question and answer session. And one of the parents asked, how do I get my kid to daven? I think the end of the question was, how do I get my kid to daven Marav? So he interrupted this woman and he said, anytime I hear a parent begin a question with, how do I get my kid to, he cuts them off right by the word to, and he says, you really can't get your kid to do anything. He knows this trouble once the parent's asking, how do I get my kid to wear a hat and jacket, usually get my kid to do things. There are very few things. You can't get your kid to do anything. I remember my brother, when we were first year counselors in Mogen Av, since I have mostly Mogen Av guys here, so I'm allowed to say it. So that's the one thing I couldn't get Aaron to go to Mogen Av. But my brother, it's the funniest story. So first year counselor, he was being very, I don't know, a little naive. He was following all the rules and he went over to a kid. He was talking, the kid was talking during davening and he went over to the kid and he said, you're not allowed to talk during davening. And the kid responded, my father's minhag is to talk. So we see I see sometimes, if the father's minhag is to drink, I have kids in yeshiva over the years that they're into drinking. It's usually a siman that the father's drinking and maybe they don't have a problem with it, but regretfully sometimes these behaviors carry on. Guys, also, since this is so informal, feel free to unmute and just, if you have any questions, just interrupt. Because each one of these are, I see so many kashas sometimes. Parents don't realize that their kids really, emulate them for good and for bad. Hopefully it will turn out good, but it doesn't always turn out so good.
Right.
Okay.
So maybe you should daven at home so your kids see you davening.
The truth is a person should daven at home sometimes. And I can't believe that people sometimes have to daven at home. And it happens. Okay. Maybe Rabbi Lubin never daven. I never saw Rabbi Lubin not in yeshiva. So maybe he's the only person I know. Maybe Rabbi Kinnerik, in his prime, never missed a minyan. I don't know. But there are certain people, you're right, but somehow their kids figure it out anyway. But, people do have time to daven at home, and there should be a makom kavu at home where one davens, and the kids sometimes do see them davening. I told somebody a story once about my father. This is not one of the things I would say, in public, but when I told it over, this person got all excited that, wow, you saw someone do that. But my father had a takeout food store. It was the food business, a very, very hard business, very, very hard. It's long, long hours. And that's why, my mother did not let any of the children go into that business. I could have had a great business, there was catering and Borough Park takeout food store. And, I could have got into it. But you had to go in 3-4 in the morning and get home 7-8 at night and, crazy hours. But my father used to come home during the winter, he came home every night, 7-8 o'clock at night. And it was routine. He would go take a shower and then he would go into the dining room and he would daven 2 Shmon Esrei. This was during the winter, was routine. It was, to me, it was routine. It was 2 Shmon Esrei, one for Marv and then one Tashlumin for Mincha. I knew that those halachas klar. One for Marv, one for Mincha. And, you would think that you would not repeat over that story. And for years, I would mumble the story, thinking that, my father missed Mincha every day. But when I told over the story, Aaron, maybe you remember, I told it over to Sidney Rosenberg. Remember Sydney from the, you know, Resigel's father-in-law? I told this story over to him. He got so excited about that story. You saw Emes HaYiddishkeit, you know. That's probably the real thing. I think because of a story like that is why I went into chinuch. Because I was in Torah College. I was taking accounting class. And the teacher was teaching, I think it was an accounting 2 class. And, you know, they only hired Hamish people to teach. So this guy was, you know, white shirt, black pants, tie. His physique, he looked like Rabbi Chait, Rabbi Menzion Chait. And, you know, skinny guy. And he was teaching the class. And I don't remember his name, but nor would I say it. In the middle of class, he says, "Ooh, hold on 1 second." He turned around, faced the board, took 3 steps back, 3 steps forward, you know, bowed down once, twice, chuckled a few times. I think in 45 seconds, he finished my essay. He goes, "Okay, fine, we're back." And I said, "Oh my gosh, that's going to be me." That's what I told myself. That's going to be me. Like, you know, you're busy all day and I'm going to, and this guy is a tzaddik in the middle of class. He mavayish himself to daven, whatever that was. I mean, he tried, you know, and, but you know, there's certain things that the main point here is that, you know, kids see you daven, but I don't know, you can take your kid to shul and they'll see you daven also. I don't think we worry about when he's 3 years old, 4 years, you know. He knows, you know, Abba's going to shul. That's also something. And you could, you know, the father could daven.
I only
you know,
have girls.
Yeah, no, you could do it. But they're probably, you know, if a person really is, you know, doesn't miss a tefillah, I don't know, then you have to ask a gadol what to do. How will my child ever see davening? But for most of us mortals, you know, it's they're probably going to see opportunity, not feeling well, and can't go to shul. Person davens, and those times are very special. You're right; it is an opportunity. But the time when they get older, see, and she'll also. Here's another one I think is very, very important. There was a maisa with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that he went to a grandson for a Shabbos. I think it was in Lakewood. The grandson was all excited. His Zaydi is going to bring his. It's coming for Shabbos. He came for Shabbos, and that Shabbos, you know, anyone with little kids knows that this could happen, that the kids had ear infections and colds up all night, kvetching. It was not like 1 minute that went by that they were, you know, happy and calm. You know, nothing worked. Candy didn't work. It was kvetching all night. It was a very stressful Shabbos for the parents. And the end of Shabbos, they felt so bad that, you know, here Rabbi Yaakov came to them for Shabbos. So they lamented to the Zaydi, and they said, "Zaydi, we're so sorry. You know, but what can you do? Tzar gidol banim." So Rabbi Yaakov smiled. Rabbi Yaakov smiled and he said, "That's not tzar gidol banim. That's gidol banim. That's gidol banim." We tend to take those types of things and think that tzar gidol banim, and we confuse it with gidol banim. The truth is, our kids need to see that we're very excited to help them out when they have an ear infection and when they, you know, all their kvetchy things that they need. You know, I had such a reminder of kids today. We're having a very important meeting in the yeshiva with one of the principals. Just the two of us were in there, and a ninth grader, you know, knocks on the door, and I open the door, and the kid comes in, he turns to the other Manal and says, "Can I speak to you?" So the Manal says, "Now? Like, don't you see we're in the middle of a meeting? Like, now?" He says, "If you're available." So he says, "Well, it's not the best time now because I'm speaking to Ray Palgon." And he looks at me and like, "Why are you interrupting my meeting?" He looks at this meeting. You know, kids need us. They don't care about all our problems. When they want us, they want full attention. You could be doing a million things, and you gotta have totally focus in. Makes no difference. They don't care about what you're busy with and your, you know, all your mysterious nefesh for Abatzas Torah and your job and your juggling and your shalom bias and your, you know, everything else you're doing for them. They need you right now to whatever, take care of something. So that Aaron Harkavy asked before, a good question. Shouldn't we be home to sometimes Bedafka so they should see us daven? But that moment where they need our attention is very, very crucial to them. It sort of sends that, I don't know if there'll be a conscious message that's sent, but the message that we're always available for them. It's like their unconditional love gets sent to them. So it's very, very, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. You can't buy those moments. You don't always have those moments. You just have to, they happen whether you like them or not. We just have to take advantage of those opportunities to, like, yeah, I'm busy and I'm this and that, but like, I felt a little bad today. Had he asked me, can I speak to him now? I say, well, I would handle a little differently, but I was like, I was the third man in on that conversation. So it was just very special. The kids just want your time. And they have to see that we're overjoyed to be able to give them the time whenever they need it, no matter what it is, no matter how minuscule it is. This is a famous.
Can I chime in over there?
Please do.
I find that I personally do have trouble with that. Not maybe a little bit with parenting, but definitely in teaching also. Not if a kid is coming to me and asking me for my help. That I feel like, okay, he needs me, or if my child, he needs me, I feel like I need it, okay. But sometimes it's more that because the child has this view of the Rebbe or the parent is not really a human, they're just someone who's supposed to help me out. So then there's a certain feeling of being stepped on. So I'm like, is there, I guess, would there any advice on how to look past those feelings of like, just to focus on the kid and not on my own ego, I guess.
But it's not all ego. So some of what you said in there is probably legitimate. Like, for instance, you're talking on the phone, or you're talking to somebody comes to your door and your kid comes over and he wants you to help them color. Said they need a filter a little bit. Know that instant, they can't get instant all the time. So sometimes it's inappropriate. So you have to teach them when that happens, how are you going to get Abba or Tati or Daddy's attention? So you could say that when I'm talking to someone and you need me, you can make a symbol like what level it is. Like if it's something very serious, they could tug at your jacket twice. If it's not serious once, you could let them know that you're allowed to say, excuse me, can I ask a question? This way it shows proper cover to whoever you're talking to. They get to ask the question that you can, and then you'll tell them how many minutes it's gonna be or how long it'll be or where they should wait. You give them an instruction. So. You know, when I was saying could be misconstrued to say they need instant gratification, that's not always so good either. That could create, you know, a little hefkeris also. But, you know, I don't think we should, I don't think they should. Shmata like is not good. You can't be a shmata. They have to know there are protocols. And you know, same way they could be taught how to respect the situation. Otherwise, they're not learning menschlichkeit. You say, excuse me. Okay, the younger the child, the less, you know, no one has to say excuse me to a guest if their baby like falls off something, starts crying. You just run. So one second, my baby just fell off the bed. So you just run. But as they get older, so if it's happening at school, for example, and they just want unended interruption, like, well, I gotta give an example, like I was once teaching Hilchas Muktzah for like 2 months, and at the end of the 2 months, I said, okay, so let's chazer. Who wants to say over different types of muktzah that there are? One kid says, like, what's muktzah? You know, what's muktzah? Yeah, there are times where you could say, well, I can't, not sarcastically, but say, I'm gonna go over that with you during recess. If you want, I'll spend special time with you. I think it is good, you know, I think it is good to give them some parameters, not just ignoring them, but parameters. I'm gonna come up, I'm gonna spend that time with you in a few minutes. I think if you're feeling like you're being stepped on, then that's not good either. Because ultimately, you know, they say on the airplanes, we have to put the oxygen mask on yourself. I would trust your instincts that it's probably not the right time to just to make yourself hefker. It'll probably come out not in the best interest of the kid, because at one point, when you get so frustrated, you're gonna punch them in the nose. That's not such a good idea either. So I think you should be mindful that I would trust my instincts a little bit. Every so often, you should double check to make sure you're getting it right, but survey them during non-hours. Do you feel like I'm helpful to you when you need me? You could ask them. Okay, so here's another thought, which is it's almost trite, so known that maybe you'll consider it trite, but I think we need to be careful of this. Like, adults say things they don't really mean. But kids also say things they don't really mean. But when they hear the adults say it, they take it very literally. So if a person comes home after a long day and they plop down in the chair and says, oh, what a hard day. Every single day, I'm exhausted every single day. So what the kid's going to learn from that is that life is bad and whatever you're doing is bad. And that could be a problem. So a person has to be careful what they say. So I was remembering that Rav Moshe Feinstein, this is a famous hashgah for Rav Moshe. He said that the previous, or now it's two previous generations, the hashgah that they used to say, it was almost like it was said over. I don't think it was 100% serious. The expression in Yiddishkeit was always "is schwer zu sein a Yid," it's hard to be a Jew. I don't even think it was meant 100%. It was like, you know, you got to go run to get the lulav, you got to go run to get the esrog, then you have to remember to carry it to shul. Nowadays they always have holders. You got to, you know, buy your talis and your thing, and you know you're walking to shul, and with all these schwer zu sein a Yid things, and people would say them, and it almost wiped out a whole generation of youth, you know, possibly went off the derech because of that hashkafa, shver to sign the yid, it's hard to be a Jew. And it's probably not so far off. There are hardships, there are challenges, but hopefully we work on ourselves to realize that we are doing Ratzon Hashem, and, you know, Adam la'omol yulad, like we know all the hashkafas, like, every step of the way, we're getting a mitzvah for it. So what we have to be careful of what we say. Just be very mindful when we're in the presence of the kids. That all those little expressions, like, just try and catch yourself. What are you saying and what are they hearing? So you got to come home like, I was awesome. I had such an amazing opportunities today. I learned. I picture a guy learning a kolo. Comes up with, like, my chavrus is a pain in the neck. And, you know, I was learning for episodes. I didn't know what was going on in that Gemara. It was so hard. A person does that every day. He comes home and tells his wife, and his kids are listening. So who knows what the kid's going to come home thinking about learning. You know, there are some learning. Could say it over the wrong way. Okay, another one I want to say over. I have two or three more. this is, to me, it's Olive Bay. So I apologize because I'm looking at the people on the screen, and it's probably Olive Bay to you also, but I'm going to say it over anyway because Pilpo Chaverim is always good, is that when kids are growing up, it's vital, mamish vital, that they know what they're good at. It almost makes no difference what. It's vital that they know what they're good at. They feel that they're like superior in something. You know, I'll give the example, like, you know, if a person masters an Amud of Gemara, he knows it by heart, he knows the Tosin by heart, and like he mastered it, he knows he has a standard that he could always reach that standard. He knows, you know, he has what to shoot for. If a person is not have the opportunity to master something, so then he could walk around Chas v'Shalom, he or she could walk around thinking they're not good at anything. So when they're good at something, they know what it feels like to be good. That's why it's Rosh Hashiva, you know, used to be very, very circumspect about giving compliments that were not real, because, you know, the kid knows it's not real. The kid knows that. I didn't ask any good question. You know, I didn't. Genius question. But he doesn't feel like a genius. But if those things may not be so smart. But if a person, you know, a kid works very hard, or musical, or mechanical, or sports. I think it is vital. You see a lot of parents do this to find an area that they can become really good at, and they use that good feeling. They love how that feels. So the more things they can become good at, the more they work at things and find that mastery or expertise in something, it's a chiyus for them. So, and that's why I think every, you know, if you get anyone went for smicha, I remember the feeling I had learning your day and get smicha. Wow, it's such an accomplishment, because why? You had to, master things at a pace. Usually I got smicha right before I left yeshiva. So I already had a job. I was under such stress and pressure. I assume someone taking medical boards or law boards or things like that, they're the same thing. So, but anything you're good at, sports, find something that the kids could be good at, give them a, you know, I know there's one Rebbe in yeshiva hired my son just to play basketball with them on a Sunday afternoon, just on our driveway, just to get them to feel like they know how to do layups. So really, really very important that the kids should feel that they're good at something. What are your comments on that, Yoni? You look like you would have a comment on something like that.
I was thinking about how to compliment older kids. I guess they're, without making them feel babied.
If you're talking about
teenagers or whoever, or even adults, really, but I guess teenagers. But I think, I don't know, when trying to compliment a teenager, they can sometimes feel a little like, okay, I don't need your I don't really need your compliment, but
right.
I think they need to hear it, but I'm just trying to figure out how to say a compliment in a way where they don't feel babied. Like, oh, wow, that's so nice. It's usually something you would say to a little kid.
I'm teaching 12th grade this year. And I had all those challenges at the beginning of the year. 12th graders need the same amount. And, you know, if a boy works hard, working hard is easy to compliment. I saw you were really working hard this morning. I see you really, you know, sometimes even if it's not a compliment, even if it's just a validation, I saw you were really struggling to get here on time today. I saw that was a struggle for you. Must be hard for you to get up in the morning. It's just a compliment, because you're like connecting with them on what's difficult. That also could be very uplifting. When someone, it's like lifting a heavy package off someone when they're all alone, and someone comes over to you and says, "Wow, it must be so hard." I remember my first year in Maganav as a camper, I was so homesick, and a kid from it wasn't called Heller yet, but in the teenage camp in Livingston Manor, he came over to me and said, "Wow, I remember my first time when I was away from camp. It must be so hard. It must be homesick. It must be so hard for you." And I remember the feeling like, it's like he lifted a weight off my shoulders. It makes no sense why that works. I'm not sure why that works. But that's also like a compliment. When someone understands you, I don't compliment you. I think you're right. They don't need our compliments. It's not the compliment. It's someone who is connecting with us. It's a caring. I think people need validation a lot. I don't know if they need compliments. They need validation. I think I would feel better if someone would say to me, it's not a request. I'm just saying, but I think in general, I would feel better if someone said to me, "Wow, you work so hard in that area. You know, it's like, it's a good thing you're doing that. That's so important." You know, they didn't even tell me I did a good job, but you know, it's so important than any compliment. Like, they're just, because sometimes we do things that are very, very hard. So when someone recognizes it, you know, even if they are having a struggle or frustration, they say, "Well, it must be so hard what you're doing." That's probably worth so much more. So maybe that would be a way to connect with an older kid, then, you know, you're right. The compliments might come across disingenuous.
So we do that for younger kids also?
Yeah, for sure. Validation.
Like,
yeah.
Instead of the compliments, should we be focusing on just highlighting their effort, highlighting the good things they're doing without I guess my classic definition of compliment is, "Oh, you're doing so great." But Rebbe seems to be saying, no, just point out the good things they're doing without not even.
I had a personal trainer I was working with. I wish I did it for more than a week, but I saw when I was doing, I was on the treadmill, and they have to push you to your limit, otherwise they're worthless. So, and it was very hard. I had to have like 11 minutes left. And I'm thinking to myself, why isn't he telling me to keep on going? You're doing a great job. I want them to say, "Keep on going, doing a great job," even though it was really, but I really was. I was working very hard and I didn't give up. So that would be okay. Like, you know, I see you working hard. You know, don't give up. You're doing it. You're accomplishing. I think even for younger kids, I think that is a compliment. That they're not giving up. I see you're not giving up. You're still working hard on it. Yesterday, you probably wanted to give up, but you didn't give up. You're still working at it. Or let's say a kid loses his temper a lot. That's what happens often with little kids. It takes a long time to grow out of it, but some kids don't grow out of it so easily. But you see, like, I saw it was so hard for you the last couple of days, but today you're still trying. Keep on going. You can do it. You can do it. Sometimes that the rooting for them, that believing in them, is also very, very important. Okay, so one last one, and then we'll just leave it open for any schmoozing. Can't have too much hashkafa one night. But so one last item I wanted to say, but I think is very, very important, is that I came across this from Rabbi Zadel Epstein, who's Mashkiach in Torah Ar. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. And the Medrash says he was learning and forgetting, learning and forgetting, learning and forgetting. And at the end of the 40 days, he knew nothing. So he davened to Hashem, you know, "Hashem, I still know nothing." So Hashem gave it to him, Vayiten Hashem el Moshe. Hashem gave it to him by Matana. So Rav Zadel asked, "Why did Hashem do that to him for?" You know, forgive my irreverence and just saying, "Oh, like, you know what that feels like? Why did Hashem just give it to him?" Like, he showed it. You know, demonstrated a certain amount of hasmada. I don't know anyone learning 40 days and nights straight. So he learned 40 days and nights straight. Why didn't Hashem give him the opportunity to understand it when he tried? He had to like beg for it and then daven for it. So Rav Zeidel said, it's a good word. He said, because Hashem wanted to show us that here you had the best Talmud, best student award, Moshe Rabbeinu, no question. And was the best Rebbe. There's no question that Ribbono Shel Olam was the best Rebbe. And it was the biggest demonstration of Asmada, 40 days and nights. And still, at the end of the 40 days and nights, Moshe Rabbeinu still knew zero. Ephes. He knew zero. And Hashem wanted to show that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't give up. He davened, you know, give it to me. So I think that could be a very big frustration. You know, kids work hard. They have to know that the best teacher and the best Talmud, best Rebbe, best Talmud, still, and he put in the best effort, still did not get it. So we have to teach our kids that it's okay. You work hard. They have to feel that we have to give them the joy of, you know, just showing grit, just putting in effort. That should be worth a lot. It should give the most amount of schar for putting in the effort on Amelim, the Amelis. We have to recognize that, even though the world is very bottom line oriented, but we're not supposed to be bottom line oriented. So anyway, those are some of the tenets that I think are very helpful, you know, wherever we are, whether it's in chinuch, but the Iker chinuch is at home. We know if you want to know how important the chinuch is, think about our own lives. Look how much we learn from our own homes. So, okay, now let's see who's out there. Well, Yechmiel Berger is being so quiet. Don't you have anything to add to this conversation?
But I didn't want to bring up something from the first part of it all the way at the end.
Sure, go ahead.
I remember by davening at home and the kids seeing you, I mean, I guess two things is one, I assume it's not just parents. Like if the kids see other adults or other people are in their house davening for whatever reason, or you know, you make a minion in your house for some reason, and they see all these people are coming here to daven for something. I mean, the impact might be different, but can I assume kids are still getting the same type of impact, even if it's not quite as strong because they see all these other people too?
I mean, the other people aren't davening?
No, I mean, I don't know, I need to see them at my house at some point, and let's say somebody brought their kid and they saw all these people are coming to somebody else's house to daven, and it's not like everybody, it's not like you have to be in shul 100% of the time, no matter what. They're seeing that people are doing these things other places, not just their parents and not just in shul.
I don't know. I know there are some people who are very careful to go to shul. You know, my father-in-law never liked, you know, these house minyanim, but I always daven. I grew up on all these house minyanim, so, you know, like I'm davening on the Rabbi Rubin's seventh place minion for the longest time, not because of COVID reasons, because I'm too lazy to schlep all the way to yeshiva sometimes. So, yeah, you know, we have to be a little bit, you know, forgive ourselves, you know, the same way we're, you know, what does the kid think when you go in to watch the Super Bowl, you know, if you're doing that? It's like they have to see our mortality. They have to see our especially human side.
It's especially true if you say, I'm going to yeshiva to watch the Super Bowl and the on the back building over there.
We have to be real to them. We have to be real. We can't try and pretend we're someone we're not. So it has to be real. You know, we try and be the best people we could be, and whatever we're going to do, we have to show a little pride in it. And would you like to come with me to watch the Super Bowl yeshiva?
But I also remember hearing by learning at home also, meaning that a lot of people have like a home office of some sort, and some people like to have it just be like their that's their private space. Nobody can see in there. Nobody can tell what they're doing, because I just need to be able to focus undisturbed. I've heard that the Rosh Yeshiva was against such things. And if you're going to learn at home, you should bedavka do it in a way that, even if it means the door has windows or something, but like bedavka do it in a way that people can see. That sounds familiar? I'm not asking for personal comments. I'm just saying the concept.
Do you know after I, you know, my long lost behelfer, Yachmiel Berger, by the way, was behelf my shir 1 year, so he's my long lost behelfer. But I'd be pretty nervous who makes his study that's closed off, that no one could see it, and just make sure there's no screen in there. He's not watching the movies in there. That's why I was laughing. I think they should put a lot of glass there, a lot of windows there. And they should, Bedav can be able to see and make sure he's learning. I don't know. Yachmiel, you know, we're just amongst friends here, right? To me, it seems that anything you're doing for that someone should see doesn't sound geschmack. You know, to be at home so your kid should see, or to daven at home so your kid should see. I don't know. To me, it sounds like what if you live life, Hashem gives you enough years, but Hashem, your kid's going to see it. He's going to know everything about you inside and out, whether you try and show it to him or you try and conceal it from him, you know, or her. They're going to know. So I would just say, just, you know, live your life. Hashem will provide all the opportunities. He'll give you a cold with fever or COVID. You have to be home for a week or two, and he'll see how you daven, you know, and he'll see if you learn. And I don't think we need to create those scenarios, but dafka, so they should see us. It sounds like, to me it sounds like a fraud. You know, Bedavka go to shul, so they shouldn't see that minion. I don't know if it's the right thing to daven in your house with a minion, then, and that, because that's what your next door neighbor needs, and you're not going to do it for him because you don't want your kid to see that there's such a thing as. I don't know, sometimes there's an Indian, I guess, you know. But I don't know. Overall, we do what's the right thing, and hopefully, Ramon Shlomo will control how it's viewed. If we do the right thing, that's what it sounds like. I wouldn't pay so much attention to. I remember Rabbi Sharfman Zatzal telling me that he was taking his kid. I don't remember if it was Yaakov Hillel. I don't remember who. He was taking them in New York to the Yankee game at Yankee Stadium. Now, granted, you know, he was an avid Yankee fan in his youth. But, like, if his kid needed to go to a Yankee game, I don't think he was not going for himself. But if he felt his kid needed to go to a Yankee game, he took him to a Yankee game. You know, I remember him saying it. I was very, you know, I was deeply impressed with that. That he felt that's what the kid needed, and he went. I'm pretty sure I heard the same thing from Rabbi Glatt. I don't know which one of his kids, but I think he took one of his kids to a Heat game. That's pretty chashuv. That even trumps the Rabbi Sharfman story. You know, the Heat I probably wouldn't go to. But Rabbi Glatt probably didn't know what it was like. I don't know. I never asked him, but. That's the way it is. Our kids get to know us.
One thing that could happen, I mean, like a lot of times kids will see their parents doing something which is completely the right thing to do, but the kid picks up on the one thing that the parent did, the parent was doing something for a shul or for a yeshiva, and at some point they let out like a little, oh, it's hard work. I don't know, it was some like tiny little thing out of the, you know, 3-4 hours that they're doing something, and for the most part they're fine, but they let out that one thing, and that's what the kid remembers. I mean, how likely is it that the flip side is going to happen, that a parent grudgingly does something because, you know, it's what I have to do, our religion said so, and the kid's going to pick up that on the 1 second of like, oh, I like this. Like, It's very easy to get the wrong message.
You're very smart. Yes, you're right. What you're saying is that the Murphy's Law is the one time you say something wrong, your kid's going to hear it, not going to hear anything else. That's probably going to happen.
That's just what stands out, because we're note that to the negative, or because it's different than everything else, so it's just the one part they remember.
It happens, you know. Our kids don't always see us at our best, and it's Murphy's Law. You know what Murphy's Law is, right? Murphy's Law is the one time that you walk outside, no one's ever outside, and you're in your pajamas and you have to take out the garbage to the street or whatever, and you figure there's no one outside at 1 o'clock in the morning. That one time, all your neighbors are going to come out. That's Murphy's Law, you know. So it's Murphy's Law. Yeah, it happens. You know? We live our lives normally. We're trying to live our lives normally. So I don't know. Those things could happen. You're right. You can't protect against all of it. It can't be perfect. It does happen. Okay, what else? Let's see who else is on here. Who's David Chait? That sounds like a pretty hush of a name. And who's iPhone? Oh, there he is. That's David Chait. Whoa, Chashuv Ma'od.
Sorry, that's a point.
So give us an insight. You grew up in the house of Chinuch. Give us an insight.
I missed the first part of that, unfortunately, so I can't say.
You can say anything you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, it does not be Chinuch oriented. Tell us a story.
I just think... On the last point Rabbi was saying is, I think kids are smarter. Like, if it's sincere, it's sincere. It's not sincere, not sincere.
Beautiful.
You could, if you try to show somebody something, they're going to see exactly what you want. But they're going to see exactly what's up. So that's just my thought.
You're Achmil, you hear what David's saying? I happen to agree with that. You can't show your kids, you know, I want them to see this, you want them to do that, because they're not going to see what you want them to see. They're going to see what they know. So you just got to lead life regular, and hopefully it'll be real. It'll be real. Thank you, W. Excellent. Sure. I think we're going to let you give the VOD. That was so on the money. One of you, one for one. No, Yoni, is it good?
If you tell everybody W. Chase giving the VOD, a lot more people might show up.
Well, he definitely had a lot of experience. You know, so that's very nice. Okay, Aaron Sanu, what did you learn from Rabbi Gibber? Are you going to share something with us? All right, fine. Does anybody else want to add anything? Ask anything? I learned that. Okay, fine, guys. Thank you very, very much. It's very special to connect with all of our guys. I got to give Rabbi Nelson Yeshaya Schwartz. He just keeps pulling out any possible way just to connect with different people. You know, it's before Pesach. Thank you for joining, everyone. If you're coming through Miami, make sure you stop in. David, you coming by? You coming to Miami for Pesach?
It'd definitely be nice. My brother is coming here, though.
Oh, all right. Okay, fine. All right, good night, everyone. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you very much.
It's great seeing all of you. Really, really very special. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.